Today on Annenberg Radio News.
If everybody who claimed to be angry at the Big Two actually stood up and cast their vote differently, then he would win by a landslide and we wouldn't even be having this discussion.
Gary Johnson hasn't made a lot of noise this election season, but his supporters might. How will they impact the vote? Good afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for Tuesday, October 30th, 2012. I'm Josh Wu. Governor Jerry Brown is back in Los Angeles today, pushing Proposition 30. The governor's pet prop would increase taxes on sales and high-income earners, mostly to fund public schools. Today at Cal State LA, Brown dismissed those who oppose Prop 30 as a wealthy minority.
Now, you'll see some propaganda. Just understand that no ads, for the most part, come, I don't know, is it 20 people, 25 guys that have a lot of money that are in the finance industry, and then $11 billion from a few bandits from Arizona. I don't know who they are.
Brown got a little excited there. A Phoenix, Arizona-based group donated $11 million, not billion, to a PAC that opposes Prop 30 and backs Prop 32. The governor's visit to the university kicks off a three-day tour of Southern California to drum up support for the tax increase. The latest USC Dornsife LA Times poll shows that 46% of likely voters support the measure. But with exactly 1 week until Election Day, Prop 30 is still too close to call. And as Jerry Brown tours the Southland, three former California governors are also here fighting another proposition, Prop 34, the initiative to ban the death penalty. Today, the fight to defeat Prop 34 shifted its focus to the victims of death penalty crimes. Kat Boza reports.
Former Governors Gray Davis and Pete Wilson gathered with victims' families today in downtown Los Angeles to garner last-minute support against abolishing the death penalty. While the death penalty is often considered a moral issue, Proposition 34 has instead focused on the practice's high cost to California taxpayers. Supporters have indicated stopping the death penalty would save the state nearly $100 million. That's something the Supreme Court deemed hyperbolic and forced Prop 34 supporters to remove from campaign materials. Still, the race remains tight. Numbers released today indicate that 48% of voters are against Proposition 34, compared to the 41% who wish to eliminate capital punishment. Joe Bonomino opposes the initiative. His son, Riverside police officer Ryan Bonomino, was gunned down while on duty in November 2010.
I don't know that much about the financial end of it. You know, personally speaking, there's no way in this world that I would want to see the death penalty abolished. If you read the stories about the victims, I think you'll have a better understanding of why we want the death penalty.
A nonpartisan study by the California Legislative Analyst Office concludes that any projected savings due to the initiative may be off by tens of millions of dollars. Governor Wilson underscored the potential threats to public safety.
There is nothing that is more important than a climate of public safety for our citizens. There is nothing, I would argue, that possibly allows justice to be subordinated to false claims of savings or even legitimate claims.
But financial concerns aren't what victims' families care about. Last December, Catherine Burke and her husband experienced the unthinkable. Their 18-year-old daughter, Saskia, was stabbed to death in the family's Murrieta home by an acquaintance. Burke says that while seeking the death penalty for her daughter's killer carries its own moral weight, nothing can match the suffering experienced by the Burke family.
I carry that guilt. I carry that regret and that shame and that horror. And he carries none of it. He smiled while he stabbed my daughter. Where do we draw the moral line for those that will never feel moral obligation or responsibility in society? We can't call them moral creatures.
Whatever the moral argument, if Prop 34 is defeated, all present today admit it would still be a small justice for the many victims of those on California's death row. Kat Boza, Annenberg Radio News.
City Council President Herb Wesson wants to put a temporary half-cent sales tax hike on the city ballot in March. The city's budget analyst says LA's budget could be short by $216 million next year. Wesson says the city can't make any other cuts. The temporary tax hike is expected to bring in $220 million. Some business leaders say business will slow down if the tax is enacted. But Wesson says even if business slows, the city will be in better shape with the tax because it will avoid raising fees and layoffs. Wesson has asked for final figures for the council by November 9th. During the first half of this year, LAPD responded to 24,000 domestic violence calls. At a news conference today promoting Domestic Violence Awareness Month, Councilman Eric Garcetti said helping victims isn't just a job for the police.
And it is really up to us, not just to those in uniform who are our saviors, but to each one of us to take an action as legislators, as friends, as family, to break that cycle and to make sure that we don't send back our officers time and time and time again to the same addresses.
Today's event was organized by LA's Domestic Violence Task Force, a group that assists city officials in developing and coordinating domestic violence policy. Fox 11 legal analyst and victims advocate Robin Sachs applauded the city's many resources.
It's so important to make sure that people know not only that domestic violence unfortunately still exists, but more importantly, that there are resources within this county and city, and there are a ton of them.
One of them is a domestic violence hotline sponsored by the L.A. County District Attorney's Office. Victims can get the help they need at 1-800-978-3600. The California Science Center celebrated its newest exhibit today, the Shuttle Endeavor. Melissa Runnels explores the shuttle's importance to the future of science.
The Space Shuttle Endeavor launched its last mission today at the California Science Center. It's an exhibit featuring the shuttle itself, the main engine, and the tires from its last mission. But according to Jeffrey Rudolph, president and CEO of the Science Center, the exhibit will do more than just show off the Endeavor.
It really is a significant moment in our efforts to inspire young people and people of all ages to want to learn more about science, technology, engineering, and to become our future explorers.
It's already working. Amarian Arias and Moses Ross from the Alexander Science Center School are already looking to explore the outer reaches of the universe.
What do you want to become now?
An astronaut.
Why?
Because I think that I can see everything that's in the space shuttle.
So when I grow up, I'm going to be in the space shuttle, fly space, and I can eat something like gravity. I can fly in gravity on a moon.
Leland Melvin was part of the crew for the shuttle Atlantis in 2008 and 9. He says the Endeavor may become the launching pad for a whole new generation of budding scientists and inventors.
It's over, but this is launching a new era in discovery and imagination for every child that sees this to think about themselves building the next vehicle that's going to take us to Mars, or being the astronaut that's going to step their foot on the Martian surface, or being a doctor that's going to save someone's life with STEM technology.
Even though it will never fly to outer space again, the Endeavor is still a potent symbol of possibility. Melissa Runnels, Annenberg Radio News.
Cool and clear tonight with lows in the 50s, mostly sunny with a high of 73 for Halloween tomorrow. The clouds will roll in a bit on trick-or-treaters in the evening. Expect a low of 55. And on Thursday, clouds in the morning, a slight chance of rain, and a high of 71. Later on Annenberg Radio News, we speak to Jackie Lacey, candidate for district attorney, about three strikes, investigating local government corruption, and where she stands on medical marijuana. With the presidential race between Barack Obama and Mitt Romney neck and neck, minor candidates are becoming much more important. As Aaron Schrank reports, third parties haven't made much noise this election season, but they could demand our attention on November 6th.
Glenda Parrott is hard at work for a presidential campaign. While Obama and Romney staffers are hoping for a push in the tracking polls, she's been fighting just to get her guy's name on the polling surveys.
Hey, Tom, it's Glenda over in San Bernardino.
Glenda is the Southern California director for Gary Johnson's campaign, the former New Mexico governor and libertarian candidate for president. She's firing off emails and phone calls from the dining room table in her San Bernardino apartment, while her husband, Ray Fostore, brews a batch of Oktoberfest ale in the kitchen.
Yeah, it keeps me off the streets and out of trouble.
Glenda and Ray are Republican refugees to the Libertarian Party. They joined its ranks 5 years ago, turned off by President Bush's foreign policy approach.
So we were thinking, well, there's no way that we could be Democrats because we know what they're about.
We've got to do something. We can't sit on the couch anymore. Just yelling at C-SPAN is not going to fix this.
And there's no way we can support the Republicans ever again. Look at what they're doing. So where do we go? So we were, for a time, politically homeless.
They found a home with the Libertarian Party, a group of just a few hundred thousand nationwide. Their exodus story is not uncommon. More than 2.5 million voters have left the Republican and Democratic parties since 2008. But that doesn't mean they'll vote third party. Glenda says many people she talks with on the phone are afraid that would be a waste of a vote.
They tell me that, well, he won't do well enough. He won't get enough votes. And I tell them, well, if everybody who claimed to be angry at the big two actually stood up and cast their vote differently, then he would win by a landslide and we wouldn't even be having this discussion.
Another concern for some, certainly for the major party campaigns, is that a vote for a third party candidate could be the feather on the scale that tips the election one way or the other in swing states, the so-called spoiler effect. Here's Claremont McKenna political science professor Jack Pitney.
The spoiler phenomenon is very real, and if you're going to support a third-party candidate, it's something you have to think about.
Just look back at Florida in the 2000 election. Green Party perennial candidate Ralph Nader got 96,000 votes. George Bush defeated Al Gore by just 537 votes.
If Nader had not been on the ballot, Al Gore would have been president of the United States.
If this year's election remains close, Johnson could play a similar role. He's thought to pull votes from Romney in some swing states, like Colorado, and from Obama in others, like Nevada. But libertarians like Glenda and Ray could care less about spoiling things for the major players. They see little difference between Democrats and Republicans.
And when you have the two parties who are there who agree with each other more than not, then it becomes a problem. That means we have one party.
This attitude makes sense to Professor Pitney.
If you're passionately opposed to military intervention, then you might see a limited difference between the two candidates. But Romney's talking about American strength, but then President Obama has a kill list.
Foreign policy is a key issue for many libertarians, like Ray.
I support our military. I just don't think we should use them every 5 minutes, every time we turn around.
Johnson and his supporters are more concerned with pushing new ideas than they are impacting election outcomes. The candidate talks about ending foreign wars and legalizing drugs, ideas that major candidates won't touch. Another new idea for many voters, Glenda says, is voting outside the norm.
That's one of the things that we do the most, is explain to people you have a choice.
Call it a wasted vote, call it a spoiler, call it whatever you want, but their minds are made up. Aaron Schrank, Annenberg Radio News.
There will be two performances at the Walt Disney Music Hall tonight. Phoebe Unterman explains.
One performance will be inside, by the Israeli Philharmonic Orchestra, or IPO, and another will be outside, by a group of pro-Palestinian activists condemning what they call the Israeli apartheid. The IPO performs internationally as a cultural ambassador for Israel. One of the protest's organizers is Marcia Steinberg, an activist and American Jew.
What we're doing here is responding to human rights issues.
Steinberg sees the IPO as one of Israel's tools for creating a positive international image while covering up their oppression of the Palestinians.
It's about the idea that Israel is going to send around all its cultural ambassadors in a way that would distract from the reality of the country.
Steinberg expects nearly 50 protesters from several organizations at tonight's protests, including Jews like herself.
I was raised to believe that Jews stood for justice, that those who had suffered oppression and discrimination were obligated to stand against that when they see it happening to others.
IPO music director Zubin Mehta, who spent 15 years with the LA Phil, has said he accepts the protests as long as they don't disrupt performances. He sees it as the price of performing in a democracy. Tonight's protests will begin around 7 p.m. and will include street theater and a musical performance. Phoebe Unterman, Annenberg Radio News.
Next week, Angelenos will vote for local officials, including Los Angeles County District Attorney. Assistant DA Jackie Lacey is running to replace her boss, Steve Cooley, who's retiring. Melissa Runnels interviewed Lacey about a range of issues, including Prop 37 to soften the three strikes law, prosecuting corruption, and the difference between compassionate marijuana usage and over-the-counter sales.
My reading of the case law that came out after the Compassionate Use Act was passed is that over-the-counter sales for profit are illegal. And until such time as the voters change the law to allow for that, it would be my intention to enforce the law.
Three strikes modifications. You're in favor of that. Jackson is not. I think that the public is clearly in favor of that. How is that going to affect you and the DA's office?
First of all, aside from helping us, it's the right thing to do. The free strike law or proposition is meant to restore it to what voters originally voted for, or what they thought they were voting for, which is that the third strike would be a serious or violent felony. It's a common sense way to ensure that if we're going to be using incarceration, it's used for those who are truly threatening and violent. So I think I'm in the majority on this. Mr. Jackson has said that it will wash away certain priors forever. We have read and studied the proposition that is inaccurate, and I believe it's used to scare people into non-voting for it.
And I want to ask you about corruption in city and county government. I know that you're on record as wanting to strengthen the DA's fight against corruption with the Public Integrity Unit. There have been criticisms of your boss that he was not as tough as he had promised he'd be, in particular with the Bell scandal. What can you do as the county DA that hasn't been done before, and what do you intend to do?
Well, I disagree with Bell is an ongoing case. It has been filed. It hasn't come to trial yet, but we expect that it will, and we expect that the jury will convict the defendants who are being prosecuted. If we can save money on the number, if we can drive the recidivism rates down, if we can save money by employing alternative sentencing courts, that we can use that money to direct more resources toward the Public Integrity Unit and be more proactive about pursuing some of these crimes. But right now, it is very complaint-driven. There are a lot of cases that come to us during election year by the person's opponent, and we're always careful about that. We don't want to influence any sort of election. But at the same time, we do want to hold people accountable and make sure they follow the law. So I think it's just a matter of more resources. There's so many complaints, and these cases take a long time, if you can imagine, to investigate.
Okay, thank you so much for your time, Ms. Lacey. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That was Jackie Lacey, a candidate for L.A. County City District Attorney. Tune in Thursday for our interview with her opponent, Prosecutor Alan Jackson. And for more news about South Los Angeles, keep checking out our website, annenbergradio.org. And now we check in with Juliana Ruiz to see what's coming up on Annenberg TV News at 6 p.m. on Trojan Vision.
Thank you. Leonard Schaefer donated $25 million to the Schaefer Center for Health Policy and Economics. Find out what the money means for the center and its efforts to make healthcare more affordable. Today was the grand opening of the Endeavor's exhibit at the California Science Center. Tune in to ATVN tonight for the first look. And for our What Matters segment, we went around campus today asking students about their main news sources and how long they spend catching up on politics. Watch ATVN tonight to see what they have to say.
That does it for us for this Tuesday. We had help today from ATVN, Evan Budrovich, Emmanuel Martinez, and Sam Weiser. Thanks also to ATVN for its help. Melissa Runnels is our producer. Our executive producer is Aaron Schrenk. And for all of us here at Annenberg Radio News, I'm Josh Wu.